Welcome to Crest in partnership with Elusive. Producer Dodd here. It's Christmas nearly, so here's our 2025 sign-off. It's an episode we wanted to do for ages. Cinder and Bateman are here to do an episode all about surf forecasting, and at the end we're going to have a Christmas forecast, and it's not quite what you'd expect. Enjoy.
Nadolig Llawen, Merry Christmas, and what a season it's been so far, as in surfing season. No shortage of storm activity in this North Atlantic. Although it feels like a lot has been met with tides or winds, which, to put it mildly, might take a little bit of figuring. Anyway, welcome to Crest. I'm Tom Anderson.
And I'm Cindy Asosdian.
And for our Christmas episode, we're going to sign off 2025 with some help as far as that figuring goes.
Yes, we are privileged to be joined here in a top secret Lantwit location, not that top secret, close to the sea, by local legend and swell guru, none other than Surfline's Jamie Bateman of Wales, and indeed Britain's offering to the growing global surf forecasting scene.
Yeah, growing indeed. Things have changed a lot since the days of tuning into Countryfile on a Sunday to see the pressure charts for the week ahead, trying to calculate when the swell from that 972 might make its way ashore, and what the wind was probably doing those several days further on.
Not to mention then matching it all to the tide and finally driving around on the day to check a range of spots. Or if you were lucky enough, managing to get a reliable report from somebody already coming from your local surf spot.
And also gone are the days of hanging onto the phone line until you heard another Welsh legend say the phrase off the lip. And the reason those days, like everything in civilization, have moved into memory...
Drumroll, Surfline, and its predecessors like Magic Seaweed. Some love it, some pretend not to love it, but now everyone uses modern forecasting science in some way or another, including you, dear listeners, because if you stay tuned to the end...
Or just scrub the timeline along with whatever equally advanced platform you're listening to us on.
Yes, that too. Well, either way, coming up after a deep dive into all things surf forecasting will be a Christmas surf forecast from the guru himself.
Sounds good. So let's remind the listeners who he is. While you can get Jamie's wider story by going back and downloading episode 46 of this show, it is worth reminding you of the key attributes. Often described as the hardest Lantwit surfer to beat in a heat, and at fantasy football as well, but that is another story, Jamie did ocean sciences at Plymouth, where he befriended some of Britain's top surf journalists too, who were studying in parallel at the time. Paul Evans, for one. He was also in university with Sam Lamoroy, Joel Grey, a couple of other rippers in that set as well. John T. Tucker, for one. Yep, pretty good time in uni.
And after a first career in IT, while being well known as the actual seaweed that Welsh surfers consulted whenever an event or important session was due, Jamie was eventually headhunted for the big job, Surfline official forecaster. Every morning, all of Britain wakes up and checks the surf, and often the man who's made the call for them is this guy. That's quite a bit of pressure, but he handles it with grace.
And he's also a humble, regular guy, a gent who famously eschews most of the branded clothing that marks out the hardcore ripper. No black caps and long socks for this dude. Throughout most of the 90s, when I should say he was only just getting started competitively, he was recognisable, to me at least, by a worn West Bromwich Albion hat. The one thing we forgot to ask when we did the previous episode, so I think we should probably start there. A deep dive into the mechanics of surf forecasting is coming up, and then the festive forecast. But first, Jamie, why West Brom?
Okay, easy. That's an easy one. So back in the late 70s, early 80s, West Brom were top of Division 1. So basically, I just jumped on the glory wagon and supported the top team. But weirdly, for some reason, my parents bought me an Easter egg, and the Easter egg sat in a West Brom mug when I was about 7 or 8.
And that was it?
So that was it.
Oh, fair enough. So it was fate.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get straight on to the important stuff then, the surf forecast, some of the basics and insights of it. So many surfers use multiple platforms. You know, there's the Wind Guru, or there's the Surf Forecast, there's SwellNet, probably better in the Southern Hemisphere, isn't it? And Surfline. So you forecast for Surfline. So go on, give us the spiel. What are the perks? What's the differences for that particular platform?
One word, Lotus. And that is Surfline Hour, Swell Model, and Breaking Wave Height Algorithm. I'm going to sound bias, but it's better than anything else that's out there right now. That is the only reason that it can. All the other platforms can give you lots of information, but they cannot give you what Lotus gives you as far as swell breakdowns. So there may be two or three swells running at the same time. Not many platforms show you that underlying information, which gives you a better idea of what to expect when you get down the beach. You may see a swell height of 6 foot at 15 seconds, but those two numbers may not be related as far as the swells. Mm. There may be an underlying long period swell and a wind swell on top. So you may be greeted with half the size of surf that you're expecting. So yeah, Lotus breaks that down for you. And it's really, for me, it's a simple graph that shows you all the swells that are in the water at the same time.
So that wave model, I guess that's the thing that Surfline has. It's a surf forecast. That's a static. Is that platform? Surfline.
Yeah, it's an in-house wave model that has been obviously the Magic Seaweed wave model was brought into it, so we've all been amalgamated as one.
Right. Okay. Yeah,
so that all that, you know, however many years, decades of information is all on one model.
I also like the platform because of the deep dive analysis that you give, you know, but
I was going to come on to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, using some journalism skill as well with some of those, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, I pitch in with my surf forecasting text on our site, and that adds value in that I obviously talk about the tides, which no swell model incorporates. You know, there may be maybe massive tides that where the swell heights, especially here in the Bristol Channel, evaporate on the dropping tide. It's the opposite in the Irish Sea. So I may allude to that. The model doesn't show that, but I can say to you, look, you know, if you want the biggest surf of the day, you know, wait for that afternoon pushing tide, those kind of things. I can look at high-resolution wind models, talk about how the wind's looking locally rather than using the global models. I can even talk about, hey, you want to be surfing today because the rest of the week looks pretty bad, you know. You want to be highlighting, you want to be making some time to get in today, which you know, looking at a swell model on its own is not going to give you that information.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good reason to sign up to Surfline for the first reason. So if you were to just take us through your day, so you know, you wake up, then you're going to make your daily forecast and analysis. So how do you go about doing that? And then kind of for the beginner surf forecasters listening, you know, where do you get that wave and weather data, and how, you know, what does it all actually mean, the period and the height, kind of starting from the basics? Maybe we'll get some, you know, surf forecasters out of this podcast. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good question, and it's a big question. There's a lot of information to flow in there. But to give you an idea about how my day starts, so at Surfline, we do daily morning surf reports at sunrise. Yes, that can be 4:30 in the morning in the summer. In the winter, right now, we're recording in December, so it's about 8 a.m., so I get a lie-in right now. So we log in. The first thing we do is check all the cams, check the wave buoys for all the swell, make sure the swell's on track, and we update the forecast if necessary. Say, hey, the weather front we were talking about yesterday is a few hours behind, you know, this kind of information. So the day forecast, day one, is bang on. And it gives you an idea about, yes, you've read it the day before, which has given you a really good steer, but that first critical bit of information in the morning, we top up. So we give the surf height condition ratings at the spots that we report for, which is around about 17 spots in the UK. So that's my first job in the morning. So kettle on, cup of tea, bang, it's in there. It takes you about an hour.
Do you report all of the 17?
Yes.
You report each spot?
Yeah, in the UK. Right now we do Wales, Devon, Cornwall, south coast of England, and then right up the east coast from East Anglia all the way up to the northeast.
How many individual reports do you have to write then? Can you strap one report across five of them or something?
Yeah, we do regional. So Gower, for example, South Pembrokeshire, North Devon, South Devon, that kind of thing. So regionally around the country.
About 8 reports.
Yeah, so then we look at each spot. There's several spots we do for each one. So Cornwall, the most spots, I think we do 6 spots in North Cornwall on its own. West Cornwall, which is, you know, right down in the south coast down there as well, we do about five spots, so they're the most. And then there's a couple up in the northeast. So yeah, there's about 17 spots that we look at.
But at that point, that's journalism. You're writing copy, aren't you?
You are, and you try to make it personable. I'm not an AI bot like some people think I am. it's been quoted to a few people. We thought he was an AI bot. No, I am real.
It's a good name.
It reads
for
like
AI
you
bot,
usually.
Yeah.
Like yeah, you can get out there if you want.
Yeah, I try to make what I write personable. So yeah, it is. You're trying to write as if you're talking to, like I'm talking to you guys now. It's not. I don't want to come across as a machine. I want to be like, how you would talk to your friends in the car park or on the phone call. Hey, when am I surfing today? Cindy always asks me, when's the best time going to be? And I might say, whatever, tomorrow afternoon. We had a conversation in the sea the other day, and Cindy's question was, which day am I going to be surfing this week? And I was like, now.
It was today. A depressing response. Yeah. It's right now.
Right now.
Like, So when you kind of wake up and look at all that and create the regional analysis, what are the kind of key metrics you're looking at? So you look at the period, the height, the wind, to make that kind of report for like the lay person.
Yeah.
Are those the big important things from the way model?
If we don't know what those things mean.
Yes. Okay, I'll try and not sound like I'm
an AI
talking
bot.
Down here or an AI bot.
No, you can sound like those things. I think it's a bit of science.
In my head, the numbers paint a picture for me. It's a bit like the Matrix, where they're looking at a screen and they say, I don't see the numbers, I just see, the stake or whatever they're looking at. So you've got the screen with all the numbers on.
Yeah.
And all those numbers paint a picture in my head. And it all makes perfect sense to me. But then I absolutely realise that a lot of people hate numbers. And those numbers mean nothing to a lot of people. So I try and when I'm forecasting, I try and put it into less technical speak. So what does it mean? So we all want to go surfing. Some people like little waves, some people like bigger waves, and the bigger the swell height and the bigger the period generally means the surf is going to be bigger. So there's a scale that you're looking at, but there's a lot of in between there. So when a storm creates a swell, the more powerful the storm, the longer the storm's there for, the bigger, the more energy it puts into the ocean. So, and that translates into bigger swell heights and bigger wave period. So you can imagine that a swell that travels away from a storm, the bigger wave periods, so that when I say wave period, that's the time it takes for a wave crest to pass a fixed point. So it can be 10 seconds. If you were to stand on a cliff and the waves are going past you, you could stopwatch it. There's a wave. 10 seconds, there's another wave.
Okay.
That's, 20-odd seconds, I think. With
right.
Any more than that is kind of in the realms of just the biggest storms. But, yeah, you can time that crest of a wave passing you at that fixed point. That is a swell period.
Right.
So the longer it takes for the successive wave to travel past that point, the longer the period and the more energy that wave holds within it.
And is that literally because the peak and the trough will be further apart if the period's longer?
Yes.
Because the sea's been going up and going down. Like if you were sitting on a boat and it goes up, down, that's a bigger wave than up, down.
So,
does that make sense?
It does. And the wavelength, that's the word you're looking for.
Oh.
So there's a...
What's the difference between wavelength and period, then?
There's... Now, I know you're going to ask me that, and I've forgotten the equation, but...
There's
an equation in there somewhere, and I'll give you all that.
Wavelength, and...
Producer Dodd is speaking behind the microphone here, so...
This is a technical moment.
Assuming that the wave speed is constant,
because we can't always hear him, so in case the wave... He says, if the wave speed is constant...
Yeah, which it isn't.
Which it isn't.
Always, but it's pretty good. The wave period is a direct function of wavelength.
Oh, I'm lost.
I think we've gone too technical. Yeah.
That's why my brain hasn't retained that information.
Good period, long period, good height, good surf.
Yeah,
I have heard you say not always, though, for some of these more...
Yes.
Some of the nooks and crannies, is that true?
I said there's a range amongst it, but yeah, generally... The shallow water, which we get obviously near the coastlines, the bigger period, swells don't travel very well through shallow water. They do travel through it, but they get disrupted a lot more because the... put this the right way now. So the water particles don't travel forward in a wave. They sort of go up and down.
Up and down, yeah.
Now, that the wave energy translates, goes down into the water column, and is we represent it by circles. So the wave particle just goes up and down, up and down. And on a bigger period, that goes further down.
And
so further depth goes further depth into the water. So it will actually feel the bottom.
Oh, and then it's getting interfered with and so losing its speed.
Like friction, pretty much. That's kind of an easy way to say it. So it's slowing down. So the waves start... shoaling is the technical term. So the waves start slowing down. So they start bunching up together and they lose the speed and the energy. That's when the speed comes in. So, yeah, in a shallow water... The wave energy gets dissipated quicker in a long period swell. So the swell height will decrease as it comes in.
I'm outnumbered by scientists here, but obviously I work in the humanities and I work around literature and history.
It's okay.
Are you effectively saying that there may be terrain around here that is more suited to an infantry charge than a cavalry charge?
Absolutely.
Cavalry is going to just get bogged down and fall over. The infantry are going to be able to get through that front line.
That's right.
This war analogy, I don't know.
Yeah. But you're right. You're
some of history's most famous battle blunders of the Battle of Balaclava. It was because the Charge of the Light Brigade. That was there was too much period. That was their problem.
First time ever war is analogous to waves.
They didn't get into the local point properly.
Yeah, that's right.
They closed out.
They were bogged down. Yeah, you'd be surprised where
it makes sense though.
All the numbers are there for a swell, and you think,
we're on.
And then you go to a break, which is, in one of these shallow water destinations, and you'd be like, maybe not quite as big as I expected. And then on another day, when it's last period, maybe the same 12, you're like, well, hold on a minute. Why is it?
Yeah.
It seems counterintuitive that would be the case, but especially, and I talk locally in the Bristol Channel, especially when the water's really shallow. And we've talked about this before, where I don't necessarily look for like a big period swell to actually create the better waves. I'm kind of looking somewhere in between.
Right.
Well, yeah, that kind of, one of the things everybody does is long period, 17, 18 seconds, people get excited. Oh, there's swell coming. But, just exactly what you said, the Bristol Channel, it's, shallow waters. So what's the sweet spot for the channel? I feel like I've asked you this before.
Yeah.
Is there a value, you think? I like
12, 13. If I see that kind of swell with a bit of height, I know that that's most good. Places that I'm going to surf are going to have, good energy. And I was thinking about this on the way down, actually, weirdly, that I surfed the Friday previous and it was a 15-second and the swell energy was really good and it surprised me a little bit. And there's probably an avenue where if a swell is directly pointed at, i.e. the swell direction is bang on, it will come in and give you that energy like you may not expect. So there are, it's not an exact thing because of the bathymetry out here in the Bristol Channel is so, unique, I guess, funneled.
And if we went further out west, Pembrokeshire or Cornwall, would you stand by that 13 seconds or can they cope with a bit more?
No, because it's deeper water out there, they can get a good swell and a good wave height even on a smaller kind of swell, but a longer period energy because the swells are not getting.
So that's why Fresh is a classic place to go in summer. I mean, it's long.
Yeah, and it's really deep out there. You'd be surprised. I think Milford may be the deepest. Yeah. Natural harbour in the world.
So you see a little hurricane off Jamaica. The thing to do is go and pick it up in Fresh.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it would surprise you, like, whoa, how is that even like registering? But because of that deeper water,
wow,
yeah. And that's it might seem obvious when you say it out loud, but obviously Hawaii, which is like the mecca of all surf, and the swells don't tangle with a continental shelf out there. It's just that abrupt thing. So a longer period. Mm. That's what they look for.
So if we see 15 seconds, go to Fresh West.
Well,
or if the swell angle is really good, stay local.
There's to be able to know that, you've got to spend time looking at those specific things. I don't think you could like look at it on paper and actually get that information bang on. With this narrow channel that we've got, Freshie and Cornwall, probably a little bit easier because it's more of a wide open area.
I'm going to ask you a couple of cheap questions now. First of all, right, please don't be offended, but here we go, right. Are surf line feet actual feet? Because surfers get themselves in such a knot. Hawaiian feet, you know, Australian feet, whatever. Like, what's a surf line foot?
The surf line scale is 5 foot is head height.
Okay.
So imagine a surfer standing on their board and they crouch down a little bit. So the average human is around, you know, maybe 5.5 foot these days, maybe a little bit bigger. So crouch down a little bit, head height is 5 foot.
So they're actual feet then?
Kind of right on actual feet, yeah. So that when they talk about wave faces, that's kind of what they...
So that wasn't a cheap question. Sorry about that. What's the hardest part of surf forecasting, or is that a cheap question?
The hardest part of surf forecasting? No, I think every surf forecaster would tell you it's their home patch.
Is the hardest.
It's the hardest. And I think because
people come up to you in the car park.
Yeah, you get immediate...
for refunds.
Yeah, you get immediate feedback. When you aren't, but I agree that I think maybe because you're so in tune with your local conditions that you berate yourself a bit more when it's not quite bang on.
Yeah.
There you are. But I also think here as well, it's such a shallow, narrow channel, it is hard. But I think generally the hardest part of surf forecasting is putting your text out there that's going to cover everybody,
right?
From somebody who's learning, somebody who wants head high or low head surf.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. There's such a vast platform of people that are surfing. I was going to say these days, but it's always been the case. You know, you've got to learn. You've got to start somewhere. So to capture everybody in one small bit of text. I find it's difficult at times, but it's something that I strive to do on a daily basis.
Yeah, like when it's really, really, really big in some of your texts, you'll write something like, well, if you want to get out, you can, but really, if anybody, you know, go to find a shelter spot, and I'm one of the ones who's like, yes, okay, I will go out.
I quite like the groms on foamies and logs days.
Oh, yeah,
like that, that's often, you should add, and... Tom on his...
it does make me think.
On his
scrawler.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And what's the easiest?
Every day is easy because I absolutely love doing it.
Oh, that's a proper good cheesy answer. I love it.
I just have to know when you said like the hardest is like your local. When do you get it wrong for your local? Are there certain like perfect storms?
Yeah, all the time.
What match? So I guess this kind of comes into the next question. But like, you know, if there's one or two metrics that you would say for the listeners to focus in on to plan their sessions, you only can have one or two, what would those be? And I wonder if that comes down to like how you get the local right or wrong.
I think I talked about, you know, there's a vast platform of people who surf. So, you know, it's all well and good reading a forecast, but you've also got to have that little bit of, you've got to put a bit of time in yourself to understand what's good for you as well. So it's all well and good somebody telling you something, or there's numbers there that look good, blah blah blah, but you know, maybe that's not quite right. And actually Surfline right now are going down the road, well they've put it live now, is session matching, where you can upload your session that you've had into your session log, and then it will alert you when the numbers come up that look exactly the same
session.
Give you a notification, say, hey, Wednesday's looking exactly like it was 3 weeks last Thursday. You know, and then you can, you know, look at that day, go, oh, okay, that sounds good. Or, no, I had a terrible surf that day. You know, I'm going to, another one. That's a great way of doing it. And you know, hats off to the data science guys that have put that together, because
what
that
a clever
is
idea.
It's a really, really clever idea.
I tend to use, if I'm not having to sort of choose what day to go, I just tend to use your words. I just look at what they and say. When it gets very small, sort of more summertime, and if I've got some stuff on, I've got to move it, and I'm like, oh, I can go surfing one of the next 3 days or something, what I'll usually do is I'll look on Sunday night And then I'll try to make some sort of comparison to the waves I just rode against that, the wave frequency one and the wave power. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go, okay, I could either surf Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday. Right, today was this wave frequency. And I pick whichever one of them. I just straight up pick. I go, today it was this, whichever one, you know, I just make a comparison. I go, oh, it's less than today, tomorrow. Right, I won't go then. Or it's more than tomorrow, more than today.
And I think you've perfectly highlighted the fact that there's so many little ways that personally to you, you can judge the days, especially when you've got busy lives. Like in the winter when people work all week and they can only surf on the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, that's another dynamic that gets thrown into it. Yeah. So perhaps, you know...
I suppose I've overcomplicated saying what I basically do is look at the numbers for something I've seen with my own eyes an hour or two ago and then just make a comparison to what's coming in the week.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. And
but that's what you're doing every single day then, isn't
and,
it?
And this, the whole set of matches thing is going to, you know, help you get to that point as well without doing kind of like the legwork that you've described.
Yeah. What do you use?
Well, I probably look at the Met Office because we've had this discussion that's got a higher resolution model for the winds. So I look at the winds and see what's under 20 for the week, and I put that day as a check the swell height. And then I use the wave buoy data from Scare, and I look at what the period of wave height is, and then I check it with your analysis. And I say, oh, I didn't get it right, or I did. And I bring them all together, and I marry.
You have an actual university professor checking your work here, Bateman.
Well, he actually looks at the charts, and
wrong.
I don't. So he knows, he knows exactly when the systems are coming through, and I ignore that, and that's where my flaw is. Like, I just ignore that, so I just say, oh. But so then the two metrics, so if you had one or two, if you could only have one or two to forecast for the rest of your life.
Yeah, if you were going to, if the surf line were going to come up with like an even more budget than the cheapest one, what two
what
figures would you put
for the channel?
I'd have Lotus.
Okay, so you have your wave model.
High res wind model.
So wind. So you don't think tide is important? I would have thought you would have said tide and wave and go blind on the wind.
Tides are like predictable.
Right.
You know exactly what they're doing. It's the same every.
You can just.
Every 24 years.
Exactly. And rotation. So,
that's
true.
You could, you could just work that out.
If I could have one more to add to my two things.
Sure.
I'd have the forecast of text.
Oh.
What? That, as in your copy.
Exactly.
Bateman's writing.
You've heard it here.
Yeah. You write
the wave
well.
The wind, figure out your own time.
I always thought you were a good writer when you used to write up surf comp reports and things like that as well. I'd always be like, yes, Bateman's written this one. It's the morning. Hey, you get some crazy requests, right? I mean, I know I put one of them into you once. Was it, I think it was 2 years ago. I remember vividly all the guys at the Boardmasters in contest control stressing out when to hold that final between Lucas and Patrick Langdon, Lucas Skinner and Patrick Langdon Dark. One of them was like, oh, it'd be great if someone knows a suit. I was like, oh, yeah, I've got Bateman. I'm like, ring him. And then I remember ringing you and you were like in your car somewhere. And I was like, oh, Jeff, how's it going? I'm here with Paulie Jeffrey, contest director, and Rob Gunning, director of WSL Europe, and they were all like sitting around the table. And you just gave us, you pretty much like took the risk of saying, I reckon you should hold your final at about 11 o'clock on Sunday, guys. Or, you know, and said, you told them when to run the final, and they did run the final. And Pat didn't win, but it didn't matter. They ran the final, you know, and it turned out to be like, you know, British surfing history got made. Mm. You handled that very calmly, but you must get some crazy requests. Like what sorts of, you know, what's the most ridiculous forecast request you've ever had? Notwithstanding those from Cindy Associan, obviously.
Yeah, the one that reoccurs more often than not is like 10 days out or a week out, and you're like, and I genuinely say, I don't know. Because, you know, we live, you know, at 50 degrees north latitude. You know, we're right in the fetch, basically, where waves are created, made. You know, it's just so changeable. Mm. You know, as good as our mathematical models are, we still don't have a handle on, you know, the weather at this latitude. It's too changeable
right.
to be able to give, you know, a concrete forecast. And I say this to Sinja, it's like, you know, I say I don't know, and it'll be, you know, a week out, and after that I start talking maybes,
right.
And it might be, and it potentially could be, all those come into it.
Hopefully, all those listeners who've scrubbed on to get the Christmas forecast at the end of this episode has just skipped through it, because I calculate, I think it is exactly 10 days till Christmas.
So there'll be a lot
but of... Because later on, we're going to be asked... So we're about to put in one of the most ridiculous...
Yeah, there'll be a lot of maybes in that forecast.
Right, well, I'm going to sort of hand over to... We've always wanted to get you and Cindy sort of sitting next to each other to sort of go with the kind of... The techie stuff, you know, like a bit of a deep dive on like the kind of spots and the technical stuff. So I think Cindy's got a few things she wants to kind of run through you. And I think this is the bit where, you know, you sort of might get offered a job at Cardiff University if this goes well.
Or not and be keep doing surf. I almost thought about trying to apply for his one of those jobs. So, well, we all like look at Surfline all the time. And I always look at Rest Bay, you know, as like the metric spot. There's a live cam. I look at all the wave heights, anything, the analysis is there because I surf Lantwit and there's no local report, you know. So how does Surfline work? Why does it only cover certain spots in the channel?
I think it's a historical thing more than anything. The kind of concept is, you know, if it's a popular beach where there are surf schools, easy access, parking, lifeguarding, you know, that those all these kind of things will highlight, okay, you know, we could do a spot forecast here, and you know the people that we that can see that have all the things that they need, you know, to go surfing. Hey, you know, surf safe, all these kind of things. It's pointless forecasting for a spot where, you know, the rip might be running at 5 knots and, you know, people that are just learning are going to be like having to be rescued like every 5 minutes. And all these other factors. So there's a list that they go by, and they try to keep it within those parameters and not. And also, you know, that we're all surfers. You know, the guys that do all the coding in the background, they all surf, and they understand that, you know, some places are more sensitive than others. They understand that they don't want to, like, attract, put people in danger where they could... have to do a mishap and they could do something wrong where there is no lifeguard cover, etc. So it's thought through. Some people argue that some places are not on Surfline that should be, some are on that shouldn't be, and I don't doubt that for a second. There's probably things that can change, but there's that kind of structure that they kind of stick to.
So I guess for the listener, they look at Rest Bay but surf other spots. They just got to know a bit about their other spot they're surfing for the winds, I guess.
And I said it before, you know, you've got to put a little bit of time into that to get, you know, the conditions that suit you, you know, more than anything. To even if it's at another spot that's not forecasted, you have to like try and judge that with what you can use on the site as it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Any spots coming online in the channel, or is that? At all for the moment.
I haven't heard of any additions. I don't think there's any plans to add in. I mean, the whole adding cameras is a whole topic that is highly discussed at the moment at the Surfline, and that is partly due to the AI tech that's been introduced in the last couple of years. So I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's smart cams that monitor the surf around the country now, in fact around the world, that measure the surf height, and that's been going for a long time, but they're building other models now which are going to monitor all the beach profiles, rips,
a lot of this
information, which is being is like a huge thing in, you can imagine, like coastal cities. I'm going to use Australia for example, where, you know, beach erosion is going to be like disastrous because there's like billions of pounds of real estate right on the shore. So right now, if you were to ask a coastal engineer for the latest beach profile, they're going to give you a report that they made last year with a pole stuck in the sand at one point and somebody standing at the other end. But now it's going to be done, like, you know, every second by this by these cameras and the smart, AI technology that's behind it. That is a huge thing for to Surfline right now.
Do you work with analysing like the movement of sediment and stuff like that?
I think about it, not so much work on it, but a lot of people in the department do. But probably more on like landslides and like sediment moving on the surface, like cover and stuff. But
okay.
So nothing coming online in the future, but that's kind of interesting from an AI perspective.
I can imagine that the cameras are going to be more than coming online rather than spots. I don't know if there's like any plans to do anything in the local thing, but there's a because of this AI tech, there'll be a push for more cameras at the breaks that are already there with the with those list of facilities and ease of access like just discussed.
Yeah, can watch back yourself surfing, why not?
Well, yeah, and there is that, yeah, sessions, yeah, exactly.
Although I don't want to sometimes see myself, but yeah. Well, we've surfed a lot at different spots, and a few times I've been thinking there's surf coming up the channel, in your report you're like, the surf's going to arrive in the afternoon, and I'll rock up to the spot and I'll be there, too early, I'll be sitting there going, where's the surf? And then you'll rock up maybe an hour and a half later, and then all of a sudden the swells arrived, and I remember having a chat with you about this. About like how do you know? I mean, I know you have all these forecasts, but like, why can't I do that? I want to be the one to rock up at the right time. So, how do you track the swell from the channel? I know we talked about going from buoy to buoy, but like, yeah, if you break that down.
Yeah, so we're lucky enough to have in the channel. We're lucky enough to have a buoy which sits right on the edge of the channel. So that's the South Pembrokeshire wave buoy, which sits off South Pembrokeshire.
And are these the points where the period is being measured, sir? And it's by the buoy going up and down is the period? Is that how they measure?
Yeah, yeah. So the buoy will measure. It's got that. It's also the weather, all the weather data, humidity, temperature, sea surface temperature, wave height, wave frequency.
But that is the fixed point.
Yes.
Talked about period is a wave past a fixed point. The fixed point, if you're looking on any of these data, will have been a buoy.
Yeah. I probably need to say at that point that it measures peak period, so that'd be the longest period swell that is measured in the water, but also give you an average period. So there's two, one's peak and one's average.
Right.
So there'd be two measurements.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that the ocean is not like a level playing field. There's a lot going on. So there could be like a longer period swell has come from a storm that's 1,000 miles away. Swell has come from a storm that's just sitting off island. There can be a lot going on, so we'll be measuring the energy that's in the water and break that down. There's actually on the wave buoys, there's actually the energy graphs as well that shows you the peak, where the peak energy is coming from on that time frame.
Am I right, by the way, sometimes those really big periods, I have sometimes looked at the data and I've gone like, right, oh, there's like 3 feet at 5 seconds running, summertime usually, and then under it is like 0.2 feet at like 19. And then I often will earmark one of those days. Now, I don't know if I'm being superstitious, so please don't like blow this apart if I'm wrong here, but I often think what happens is the 0.2 at 19 will grab some of the like 6 second period waves and turn them into like a good set, and then I will often pick those days and go, yeah, hit that wind swell day, because with the underlying second swell that's got a huge period, they kind of join up. Or am I just imagining it?
No, it's probably not as simple as that, but absolutely a wave will merge. They can merge, and you may be lucky enough to hit one that comes in, and the set contains both.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at a forecast for California, they often talk about combo swells, and what they mean by that is there could be like a southerly swell from the Southern Ocean, which is like 18 seconds, and then a northwest swell from the North Pacific, which is like maybe a bit shorter, 12, 13 seconds, and they will combine to give them specific, like peaky conditions on a beach break that might not be good on one swell on its own.
Right.
So yeah, you're not wrong in what you say there.
Okay.
Tom, have you ever heard the terms constructive and destructive interference?
So Dodd's asking about constructive and destructive.
We're going technical again.
I don't know what that means.
When they're constructive, they combine.
Bateman's pointing at him though and smiling, which means it means something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'll give you a brilliant example of.
Oh, here we go.
Constructive interference.
Constructive and destructive interference. Yeah. Here we go.
Are so the listeners still there?
Dodd, by the way, is a science geek. Yeah. So you know that's why you get, you know.
We should have said before.
That's why he does all the sound stuff. You know, he's interested in sound waves. So we're not allowed to. He can't still.
Yeah, I've got a degree in oceanography as well. So.
And he does have a degree.
So it doesn't just relate to ocean waves, obviously, that term. Right. You know, it's, you know, sound waves and other waves. But, yeah, the great example of constructive interference, and we've probably all heard about it, is Nazaré.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, go on.
Nazaré, so.
Is that the canyon?
Yes, there is.
Puerto Escondido is the same thing, doesn't it?
So Nazaré is a brilliant example, and you can see it.
And Hossego La Nord as well.
There is a canyon there, but yeah. Nazaré is the more pronounced example of constructive interference. That because it the swells that come into Nazaré at the right direction, it's kind of like this sort of spot on direction that comes in. The swell energy will come into the canyon faster than it comes into. The swell that's on the other side of the canyon, because waves travel faster in deeper water, so those waves will begin to refract around that canyon and then come in at a slightly different angle. So you get one swell coming in at one angle because it's refracted in the canyon, and you get the swell coming in the swell direction, and they will meet, and they meet in constructive interference into those massive giant peaks that we see.
Right.
We saw it yesterday morning. I don't know if you tuned into Nazaré. Yeah. Saturday morning. The first thing I saw was just this massive, like, I don't know what it was. It's just like a tower block.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what constructive interference is. So there's the wave energies coming together to create something bigger than the whole, if you like.
And destructive interference would be an outgoing tide or a...
No. Deconstructive is the opposite. So two troughs will meet.
Oh.
Whereas the constructive interference is where two peaks meet. I should have said that. So two peaks will go together and go upwards, and two troughs will do exactly the same. So almost make a zero, like nothing.
Right.
So there'll be... That's where you see... At Nazaré, you may see where it looks like there's like a pattern on the surface of the water where it's like up and down like this.
Yeah.
And that's that interference. And like I say, it's not just ocean waves that do it. Light waves, sound waves do the same thing.
So that, like, to me, like, that's another metric, right? We said wave, like, wave period, wave height, and then angle. So, like, you're just talking about the angle at one is coming in.
Yeah, and obviously we talk about the Bristol Channel, not so much the case here, because, you know, we generally shadow from different swell directions. We don't really get, we kind of just get one. But, you know, it does mix up a bit. It can make beach breaks a bit more peaky if there's a few swells running. Yeah.
I use, like, you said once, but 240 to 270 is what comes up the channel.
Yeah, so the swell window,
so you can look. So when I look at the periods in the 19-second, 0.2 feet, I'll just, if it's a swell, like, I'll add that swell angle as my third metric, and that really, I think, marries nicely sometimes.
Would you be saying, if it's 240 to 270, are you saying that 255 is perfect because it's right down?
Yeah, we'll just think of the channel when it opens.
Yes.
Think about a circle.
Yeah.
So that's a,
and it's that angle that's coming in.
Now we're not going to go for battle this time. Go, that's a basketball going swish through instead of hitting the hoop.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Straight in, yeah.
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 Yeah, slam dunk.
Because you can look in the buoy data website and they have a cool like image, and you can see all the dots, and that's telling you where the angle is.
So 255.
It's kind of fun.
We got that on Surfline too.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I should go to Surfline more. I'm paying. I should. I feel like you should do a video log on Surfline as well. Be like, and this is a rosette. So just coming back to tracking the swell, the buoy.
Mm.
So would you say like a rough estimate is like if you see it at Pitt Pems, the swell, the long period swell, is it 3 hours to? Lanswit Way, 2 hours? I know you can calculate it.
I'll give you the cheat.
Okay, I'm going to write this down.
Yeah, there's a cheat code. So,
here's a pen.
Okay, cheat code.
Yeah, so the waves, roughly, waves travel at 1.5 times the swell period.
Okay, I'm writing this down, actually.
In knots.
Okay.
So if you, 10-second period, mm-hmm. obviously travels at 15 knots. So you measure the distance between your two. So between the buoy and your choice of surf spot, and you'd be able to work out when that the swell hits that boat, you'd be able to work out exactly when it's going to arrive at the beach.
Okay.
So if you see a peak on a wave buoy,
yeah,
and you're 2 or 3 hours away,
the period, you watch peak
that,
in the period.
Yeah, what's that, or peak in the swell height.
Peak in the swell height, okay.
Period, whichever it okay, might be, you know, to give you the maximum amount of energy.
Right.
If that's what you're looking for,
yeah,
you can rock up at that beach and that wave will arrive.
And bang that, that is time. What he's doing when he pulls up to the car park 1 hour later than you, as
yeah.
you were just
yeah,
saying earlier.
Really
yeah,
really irritated me. Yeah. Well, I've got this now. I'll test it out.
Yeah, 1.5. It's not exact, but it's good enough to,
yeah,
to get
no.
you. So a great example of that is a couple of years back, massive North Pacific swell. There was a lot of big wave folk, you know, harassing our surf forecaster, Kevin Wallace. You know, when's this going to happen? And they all went to Baja, that big
Todos Santos.
Todos Santos spot. And Kev was literally like, between like 12 and 2, or 12 and 1, even like an hour, that's when you're going to get the biggest wave. And that's when one of the guys got like the biggest wave that was out on the day. So it's just that easy to narrow down.
Math.
Given the maths. Yeah. Sorry. Nobody likes numbers, Cynthia. Maths is the key.
Simple, 1.5 times.
Listen in maths, kids.
Speaking about like forecasting worldwide, so you're in the UK, but if you were to like look at the rest of the crew, who has the hardest place to forecast for the whole team?
Florida's pretty hard. Yeah.
Because of the hurricanes, or
it's
that's
just
surprising.
They've also got the Bahamas are sitting in the way of a lot of it,
right.
But then there's these little channels that swell can go through.
Okay.
That's really, you know, that's impossible to like say, is the swell going to be like bang on the right angle
right.
to get through one of those? They've also got the Gulf Stream, which rips up that coast, that bends and refracts all sorts of like wonderful things. And also, a lot of their swells come from, if you take hurricanes out of the equation, a lot of their swells come from frontal lows, which rip off the East Coast really quickly.
Yeah.
So they're relying on, you know, specific timing of the wind of the fronts that come off, and we've talked about how dynamic they can be. You know, maybe the models are like 3 hours wrong and the front stalls a bit and they may get more of a southerly swell compared to, and it's like
right.
you know, I do joke to them and say, oh, you know, you should try forecasting out here, but they've got it's an emotional roller coaster for them to get that timing of it right, like when's that swell gonna peak because of the frontal ones that, because they generally, they're tracking towards us, aren't they? So they're just
right.
ripping off America on their way here, and they're leaving the swell behind almost.
Do they travel that way because that's the way the planet's spinning?
Yes.
So they're just, you know, it's like one,
yeah.
like balls running off each other,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot of Florida surfers, so they've got to make a lot of people happy over there.
I mean, and you know, they obviously do a great job. They've been forecasters there for, you know, a long time in surf line,
yeah.
doing it, and there for a reason, because how, you know, and they don't get a lot of swell, so when there is, you know, they
yeah.
want to be on it, you know.
So one more bonus question about surf line is, I know there's this certain color on surf line, and it only goes that color. I think it means excellent when
it's like
the
purple. Is it a
the purple,
purple yeah.
when
yeah.
the forecaster themselves does something.
Yeah.
Could you? Because I know a lot of people are like, "What does purple mean?" I think
go surfing.
Yeah, go. So
we haven't. But you don't stick purple around here often.
I've seen it once.
Often. Yeah, I have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is has to come together for purple? So if anybody sees this, is good for the listeners. Every time they see purple, just step.
Yeah.
Just
down,
go and stick.
Down tools.
Yeah. So what does it mean to be purple?
It means that it's like...
Well, in ancient Rome, it would mean that you're a Caesar. Carry on. Sorry.
Good commentary.
Don't cut it. Yeah, good.
I mean, it's basically like a full day where the waves are going to be really good and, you know, it doesn't get much better. Go surfing. That's what it means.
Because I think I've seen once, maybe, in the last
yeah.
few years.
There's so many, like, aspects out here that means
yeah.
it's not going to be a full day. There may be, like, 2 hours on a tide where it could be
right.
good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very rarely is, like, a full day where it's like, I went surfing at 9 this morning and I'm going to go back in at 9 tonight because it's still pumping.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah, they do happen,
yeah.
but not very often. So there's more good days elsewhere, I would say, than there are.
I'm just wondering... In my mind, like I've always kept a surf diary. In my mind, some of the best surf sessions, like as in conditions wise, you know, it doesn't matter what mood you're in or whatever, where like I've actually seen absolutely epic waves along these coastlines have coincided with snow or blizzard or around the time of snow. Is that because snow gets created by the same unique set of circumstances that, you know, like have you got a big huge pile of like water being brought off the ocean with a storm that's hitting a cold front going the opposite way?
I think that
many times snow is pumping.
The immediate thing that comes into my head is it may be that you get the swell and you get a favourable wind in those conditions.
Yeah.
Where you live.
Yeah.
So perhaps where you live and surf.
Well, because we need an easterly to make it cold enough.
Exactly.
For the snow, yeah. Yeah.
And also, generally, for us to get snow here, we need, and we're kind of going off topic here, but to get snow here, we need cold air coming in from the east, cold, dry air.
Yeah.
But we also need an Atlantic weather front to be coming in from the south. And those two things combine. Usually, that means there's going to be swell because there's a low pressure out there in the Atlantic. But also, we got this cold easterly wind, so it could be...
Would that put you off putting a purple, though? You know, because you'd be thinking it's too cold to be an epic day? Or does it... No, it doesn't have to be 30 degrees and sunny, too.
No. Temperature's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And you were talking about measuring between those two boys. I'm just wondering, have you got any sort of personal stories of surf forecasts that you've kind of... You've gone, right, oh, it's going to be... And you've turned up and you have just been flat out wrong and it's been rubbish. Or perhaps the other way, you weren't expecting it and suddenly it's good.
Yeah, well, Tom, totally, especially here in the Bristol Channel because of the winds are so... The wind more than anything.
Yeah.
Obviously, the swells, you know, can arrive a little bit late or...
Yeah.
But the wind more than anything is so temperamental because of the narrow channel that we're in.
Right.
The winds behave weirdly. You know, the high-resolution wind models, as good as they are, you know, they're not perfect in this kind of, like, narrow strip of water that we've got. So, yeah, I mean, I say this to a lot of people. I generally cycle down the beach to go surfing because I'm very lucky enough to live, you know, less than half a mile away. And I cycle around that last corner to the beach and I genuinely don't know what I'm going to see.
Right.
Every time. Because the winds could just do something that little bit that you're not expecting.
So you mentioned bike. I go for a bike ride instead of surfing sometimes. And there was a day this autumn where I went for a little bike ride because I'd written the surf off. And then when I came round the corner by the golf club in Porthcawl where I live, I was like, oh, whoa, hang on. And I had to turn around, fly back on the bike. And then I immediately went to the wave frequency and wave energy metrics that night and saw that the next day was going to be the same again, and then cancelled everything to like go sit. And it was like, 2-3 foot. Like it was like a sneak swell that kind of wasn't expected. But that was also being pulled in with the tide. But
I think that it's the wind more than anything for me, because I'll say about Lotus, the swell model, it's my, literally like my base level trust is in that model is so good. Yes, you know, swells do arrive.
Yeah.
But that baseline of having that information at my fingertips means that I know when the swell's coming. It's just that little, just that wind. Is that wind going to be what this? But tomorrow is a great example. We sit here on Sunday and Monday tomorrow.
December 14th right now.
There's a weather front coming and it's going to be parked really close to where we are.
So you don't know.
So there's it's touch and go whether it's going to clear to the east. It only has to be 10 miles and it could be fun, and it may be 10 miles back the other way. And you know, I said before, the mathematical models, as good as they are, they can't get it like bang on to that final degree. So there is always that. Yeah,
it's so hard as a surfer though, like tomorrow I had a write-off, you know, because of the winds, and now you're telling me there's a chance, you know, what do I have to like check the winds and tomorrow morning change my afternoon?
Well, once I put it in my diary, the waves break in the dark. Once there's work in the diary, that's the way I see it. If I'm teaching a class, the waves break in the dark.
Yeah. And as a forecaster, it's difficult to word that. It's like, you know, how many, at what point do you stop saying maybe? and start giving indefinites, you know?
Yeah.
You have been saying lately, like, I keep saying the wind's going to go away.
Yeah, and they keep changing their minds.
Tuesday, maybe, some good winds. Yeah. Well, speaking of your kind of surf line job, so what would you say is kind of the best or most fun aspect of it? You mentioned just doing it, but is there one thing that really, like, just makes you chuffed or stoked?
I guess the obviously, like, looking at weather charts all day is, like, you know, dream for me, because I just, that's what I love doing anyway. I look at that as my kind of, like, cup of tea in the morning, and looking at the weather charts, whether I'm working or not. I'm just looking at whether it be surf or, you know, any other sort of weather madness. So I guess it's looking at doing something I enjoy all the time, but also maybe I'm helping people to get the same thing out of surfing that I get, which is, like, well, that's difficult to explain.
It's the hunt.
It's just, you get so much joy out of not just going surfing, but the whole thing around, you know, is it going to be good then? Am I going to be good? And then all this thing, but the actual, and the friends that you make, am I helping people get the same amount of joy out of it that I get? And if I am, then that, you know, it's got to be a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good bonus of your job.
Yeah.
I want to ask about superstitions a little bit. I'm sitting here with two scientists, but, like, you know, we've got these sort of, you know, you might wear, like, a certain, you know, football fans wear, like, a certain pair of socks on game day or whatever and things like that. Have you kind of come across anything like that? Or, like, quirky surf checking habits, you know, like guys sort of, you know, always leave the cam on at night, or, you know, or I don't know, something like that, like, I suppose, because I've got, like, little superstitions, you know, sort of, if I've had a good surf, you know, I might, like, step on a certain rock on the way back up the beach and things like that.
Everyone's laughing. I just fall on the rocks.
Yeah, there's a lot of falling going on out here.
So, I mean, seaweed itself is a superstition in the first place, wasn't it? You know, the actual original magic seaweed of a couple of hundred years ago, you know, people would hang the seaweed as, like, a superstition.
Yeah. That's true.
These are the ancient traditions of sort of forecasting red sky at night. Although that's been scientifically proven.
I think my brain's way too simple for superstitions.
Yeah.
It, you know, it loves maths, but, you know, beyond that, it's a bit, like, stupid. So I know I'm going to say no.
Oh, you haven't got, like, lucky numbers?
Nothing.
No.
Nope.
I don't have so much superstitions, but, like, scientifically, I write down stuff like 0.5 meters at 13 seconds at a pushing tide. It's always go out if it's not a big tide. Like, I have certain metrics,
so
you know,
where and then
I'm out, or I go too early, and I'm like, right. Oh, how did I do that? I had all those metrics I wrote down. I'm too early or too late. And so I always just think, like, it's not a superstition. I have a habit of, like, writing down a criteria and then try not to just be out there at that time. And then I'm there too early because I'm too keen.
Yeah.
So. If you could,
Vaughan had a good superstition. Yeah. When Magic Seaweed had that camera where you could take it over for a few minutes, remember that? You could ask the camera to pan. Apparently, I believe him, he used to sit there in work, just moving the Rest Bay camera to, like, pan away from the liner every couple of minutes all day, to annoy everyone. That's not quite a superstition.
I thought you were going to say he wears board shorts sometimes. It's surf
wearing
to bring
board
the swell
shorts
in.
To surf, yeah. Yeah.
Even when it's
West
cold.
West Bromwich hat.
Yeah. Still got that.
Still, yeah.
If you could kind of design the perfect day, swell, tide, crowd, location, what would it be? You know, you can dreamscape this to the world or the channel. Oh, this is a tough question. Okay,
this is
like
when the BFG gets asked to make a dream
anywhere,
queen, isn't it?
You know, that's,
like,
tough.
You got to put in all the. What's the recipe? What would it be?
Yeah.
Crowd and location.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, if I stick to home, obviously...
You could do two.
Yeah, a good day at home with all the crew in, then, you know, that's pretty good, because...
I think she wants numbers.
Yeah.
Swell, it's high, the wind.
So,
the point left.
Yeah.
You've got to enter the numbers to make this day happen, you know, like you're those guys in the wave tank or something.
So the numbers would be probably maybe 6 at 12, 7 at 12... that's 7 feet at 12 seconds, and then no wind. Just forget the wind altogether. We'll just cancel that. Outgoing tide.
Oh.
Not too big a tide, but an outgoing tide. Yeah.
Right. Why the outgoing? Just like the way the wave breaks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, obviously, dear listeners, is for South East Wales. out further. Yeah,
yeah.
Go so further afield.
Out further
now.
West, yeah. Would be a bit different. But they probably, you know, they like the drive out there. They probably don't want us.
Yeah. The reason you mention that is, yeah, the tidal streams in the Irish Sea are kind of opposite to what we have.
Yeah, because I'd say, like, if I had a full day off and I could go anywhere, I'd probably stick a massive swell into Ceredigion and crank that wind round to southeast.
Yeah.
And go up there.
Yeah, and that'd be the outgoing tide.
That would be the outgoing tide to pick up.
Biggest surf, yeah.
Yeah, it would, yeah, because it's the Irish Sea tide.
Yeah.
What if you had to go around further, the world, if you could, like...
Yeah, if you
pick somewhere.
If
someone
has gone on the long term sick for 6 months and they're looking to transfer someone to go and forecast somewhere
and
else
surf.
In the world
and surf.
Where do you go?
That's got to be Ireland, surely.
Really?
Yeah, Ireland.
What? Not like?
Nah, Ireland.
Indonesia or
Ireland?
You'd go to Ireland.
Yeah, it's such a epic place to go surfing.
And forecasting.
And forecasting. It's probably a little bit familiar, I guess, for me. But yeah, Ireland's, I've been there way too many times and it's always good. And there's lots and lots and lots of places to go.
Who does the island?
There's no actual forecast of this island, so it's all just the Lotus forecast model.
Right.
Yeah, there's no actual forecast of text for Ireland.
So when...
Maybe there will be. Hey...
When the top big wave riders are looking to hit Mullaghmore, are they like phoning Surfline up and asking them, or are they doing it off their own bat?
A lot of them are really good forecasters, obviously, because they you know, they've been looking at it for so long, they know what they want. But we do have conversations, yeah, we definitely have conversations, just to tune them in, I guess, to, you know, if they've got schedules they need to keep, you know, if they're darting around here and everywhere. But yeah, they definitely have discussions with us. And usually the question is, you know, how big is it going to be?
And is that is that transactional, or is it more of a thing that Surfline kind of sees it as, you know, it's better to have those guys happy that they've got a Surfline guy they can phone up. I mean, I didn't even occur to me, you might say to me, when I rung you up with Rob Gunning that day, oh, here's the bill.
Yeah. No, they do.
Does Nathan Florence get sent a bill?
They do have, they obviously like premium members of Surfline, and they do,
oh, okay,
they use
yeah,
they use it, you know, with vigour, the application, but they do, there are partnerships at times with, you know, certain high level pros to do certain things.
Okay.
Yeah.
What let's just ask you about yourself then with Surfline. Are there any sort of, you were talking about the cams and stuff like that, you know, and all that technology that's on the line. What about you personally then? You like what you do now? You sort of,
yeah. I love what I do now. There's no like. It's like I am. My wife calls me Mr. Smug. When somebody asks, you know, when you're in a conversation with maybe a get together and there's somebody you don't know and they ask you what you do, and my wife's eyes like immediately roll, like, oh, here we go. But yeah, I think personally with Surfline, we're gonna. I know the goal this year definitely is, next year and the year after is to get more local and do and be out and about and try and do more of the local competitions and kind of like maybe. Not just the Wales, but the UK, and try and like get out there and meet people and just show that we are local. We do, it's not, you know, Surfline, yes, it's an American born company, but we do it, you know, I live in Wales and I forecast for the UK, so it's just to give that face to.
So we might be able to sit you on the couch during one of the heats at the Welsh when we're commentating this year, and you know,
yeah.
like they do, like they used to sit Sean Collins down.
Yeah,
you know,
that's it. Absolutely, and UK wide as well. Hopefully, just get out there and just put a face to it all. I am not an AI bot.
Definitely aren't. speaking of, you know, Christmas and Surfline forecasts, you know, if we were to push you, the guru, to think about a surf forecast for Christmas from North Wales down to South Wales and down to England, maybe for a mention or two. Would you say you have some, you know, is there something you could say for us?
I reckon we should try this now, like, properly, like, as if we're on the radio, you know, and they introduce, you know, Thomas Schaffernacker now. So, you know, so, and now, you know, we've 3 minutes till the pips, and here's the surf forecast.
Yeah. I definitely think it's gonna ease back a few gears. I.e. the North Atlantic, it's been like raging, and the next week is gonna be, you know, strong, big, lots of wind. And I definitely think come Christmas time, so the actual day, which is it a Sunday? Friday?
Maybe it's Sunday. I thought it was 11 Thursday, days from now.
It could be a Thursday. Yeah, like you're right. It could be a Thursday. I definitely think as we go into that weekend that things are going to settle a little bit. They're potentially going to still be swell. I think we're going to be less winter and more kind of like late autumn, where it just calms down a little bit and we get more sort of fun swells.
Beaches rather than points.
Yeah, and less, not always less wind on it, but just a little bit calmer than we've had. And I don't say that with 100% accuracy, because the North Atlantic will do whatever the hell it wants. But it does look like, you know, we are going to get another like mega storm come off America going into this week, and then potentially another one behind it, maybe not quite so. But after that, I've got a feeling that we're going to have smaller surf, maybe less wind, maybe better conditions. But that, as any amateur forecaster will know, anything more than a week, 10 days out is, you know, if you're forecasting that long out, you've got to use a lot of potentials and a lot of maybes. But that's kind of how I feel it's going to go over Christmas. Certainly beyond Christmas into the week up to New Year.
Sounds nice. I reckon that means then that it's everyone can have a break from turkey and maybe get the get a couple of little sausages and a portable barbecue and
some
s'mores or something,
yeah.
And
go down
the beach and catch a bit of sort of.
There may be a lot.
It just feels sunny. That forecast felt sunny.
It does.
You didn't mention the weather then. I know you say you don't care, but like.
Yeah. I think maybe we may be able to surf spots that we might not be able to surf for a while because, you know, it's been just too much going on.
If
that kind of thing. You might suddenly find yourself going to places like, oh, I haven't been here for a while because it's been so big and stormy. And so, yeah, there we go.
Love it.
Well, flag in the sand.
Excited for Christmas.
I'd like to say a massive thank you for that, Jochen Vauer. That was really helpful. It was lovely to actually. Cindy says, you know, she only ever talks to you in the rip.
It's true.
And I usually talk to you when we're at a contest of some kind, and you're like busy worrying about whether the surf is going to do what you said it's going to do. And
yeah.
I'm normally getting a quick cup of tea or going to the loo between commentating heat. So yeah. It's been nice to sort of sit down and just like, you know. Have a chat without the kind of clock ticking.
Yeah.
So I'd like to thank you very much, and I'd like to thank all the listeners as well. You've been with us for the year again, and we're gonna play the sleigh bells of Harlech again in a second. Thanks, big thanks to Cindy. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thanks, producer Dodd. Thanks everyone else who's been involved, and we'll see you in the new year. Gwelwch chi yn y flwyddyn newydd. And hopefully we'll see some of you guys.
Go surfing.
A nice sunny Christmassy surf. And if it isn't like that, then it is 100% our fault for not listening to the bit when Bateman said
maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.